Hey guys, this is Doug Aldrich from the Dead Daisies, and you're listening to and watching the amazing Sydney Taylor on Metal from the Inside.
You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. You guys are listening to episode 37 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. First things first, I just wanted to apologize for no episode last week. To be honest, I'm working on a lot of different stuff right now for the podcast and some other really cool projects that I'm going to be announcing soon that I'm involved in. So I just needed a week to organize myself and get some stuff set up for the podcast. So I took that week and we did not have a new episode last week, but have no fear. We are back this week with a brand new interview with one of my favorite guitarists of the modern day, if you would say. Even though this guitar player has been in the industry for years with his band Lion in the 80s. He was also in Hurricane, which we talk a little bit about, but most of you know this guitar player for his time in Dio's band in the late 90s, early 2000s, as well as his time with Whitesnake, and that is Mr. Doug Aldrich, who is now currently the guitarist in the band The Dead Daisies, which he joined, I believe, back in 2015. So he's been in The Dead Daisies for a little over 5 years now, and they just released their brand new record, Holy Ground, back on January 22nd, which is the first Dead Daisies record with legendary vocalist Glenn Hughes. And we talk all about the brand new record, but I was so excited to have Doug on the podcast. I was actually a part of a panel a couple of weeks ago with Doug for my friend Steve Kaler's Rock Fantasy Files. And after having the chance to speak with Doug and connect with Doug over there on the Rock Fantasy Files panel, I knew that I wanted to have him on for a one-on-one chat here on the podcast. And I'm so happy to be bringing you that interview on this week's episode. Doug is such a down-to-earth guy and is just so open about everything that he's done over the course of his career. On the Rock Fantasy Files panel, we got really into his time with Dio and his relationship with Ronnie. And here on the Metal from the Inside podcast, we covered a lot of ground, especially on the new Dead Daisies record, as I just mentioned, Holy Ground, you know, working with Glenn Hughes, as he did work with Glenn Hughes quite a bit when Glenn was doing some solo gigs a couple of years back, you know, what it was like writing with Glenn, what it was like recording the new record, which was recorded pre-pandemic, and just everything about the process of putting the record together and finally releasing it this year. Like I mentioned earlier, we also talk about his time in Hurricane and playing on the record Slave to the Thrill, which is such a fantastic record. If you guys haven't had the opportunity to listen to Hurricane, I would definitely recommend that you go and do so. The lead singer of that band was Kelly Hansen, who is now singing with Foreigner, as many of you probably know him from. But Doug played guitar on that record Slave to the Thrill, so we talk a little bit about that. We also get into Doug's gear a little bit, specifically when it comes to his guitars. He shows us his two go-to guitars at the moment, his two Les Pauls, and gets into the specs of each one, which was super cool. If you want to actually see his guitars and see, you know, him describe everything, you know, visually, you can go to YouTube and go to Metal from the Inside's YouTube channel. Here you can watch Doug and I's conversation, and yeah, he gets into all the specs, everything that is on his guitars at the moment that he has been playing like crazy. And he also talks about, you know, what it was like for him to get into Les Pauls, what drove him to want to play Les Paul, you know, beginning as a guitar player and all that fun stuff, which was such a cool, you know, kind of change of pace here on the podcast. We've never really done that where we've gotten into some gear and things like that with certain players, which it was just so fun to, you know, actually see Doug's gear and see his guitars and have him actually, you know, be able to point things out on the Zoom call. It was really, really fun. And I think that you guys will enjoy getting to see that. We talk about so much more over over the course of this conversation. The interview was over an hour long, which is some of my favorite interviews are interviews without time constraints where we can really sit down and get into a ton of different topics and, you know, do things like go over gear and you know, things like that. It's just, it makes for such a great conversation. And that is what this week's interview is with Doug. Just a really great conversation that I think that you guys are really, really going to enjoy. So again, if you'd like to see Doug and I's conversation, you can go to Metal From the Inside's YouTube channel where all of our interviews are posted, all of the Zoom calls and everything like that. So you can actually watch our conversations and interviews rather than just listen to them. We also have Metal From the Inside merch now through Season of Mist, a great metal label based here in Philadelphia where I am also based. If you'd like to buy some Metal From the Inside merchandise, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com. Here you can just go ahead and search Metal From the Inside. Our merch will come right up and it is available in many, many styles from t-shirts to hoodies, long sleeves, muscle tanks, women's fit, everything that you can think of. And they are great quality and they will be shipped to you super, super fast. So if you're interested in getting Metal From the Inside merch made to order just for you, again, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com. And if you have purchased merch, be sure to go ahead and tag me in a picture of you wearing the merch. I've gotten some great photos of supporters wearing some merchandise so far, and it's just so crazy to see you guys repping the Metal From the Inside logo and just the podcast. It's the coolest thing, and I would love to shout you guys out on our social media. So if you have bought a shirt and if you are loving it, be sure to go ahead and take a picture of you wearing the merch, tag me, and we will repost it. As I mentioned back when I was talking a little bit about taking a break last week, there are some really, really cool things on the horizon for not only the Metal From the Inside podcast, but for me and being involved with some other projects that are really, really exciting that I can't wait to share with you guys. And I can't say anything yet, but I will be able to soon. I'm working on some really big things and I'm very, very excited to share it with you guys. So if you would like to stay up to date with me and hear announcements as they come, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. I always share any announcements there. So that is where you can find me. And yeah, there's just some really, really cool things happening that are kind of dream come trues for me. And I'm very, very excited to share them with you guys when the time comes, which will be very, very soon. So stay tuned. Also here in the podcast, next week, we're going to have a returning guest on the podcast, which I'm not going to say who. I never really like to say the exact names of the guests I have. I always like to keep it kind of a surprise. But if you can guess who the recurring guest might be, he was on the podcast last year, so it's been a little bit since he's been on the podcast, but I'm very looking forward to having him and another special guest on to discuss some new work that they've got going on, a new project, and it's going to be really, really cool. So you don't want to miss episode 38 of the podcast coming next Friday as well. That's enough of me talking for this week's episode of the Metal From the Inside podcast. When we get back from this very short break, we are going to dive right into my interview with guitarist extraordinaire, Mr. Doug Aldrich. Hello, everybody. Sydney Taylor here, and we are back for another episode of the Metal From the Inside podcast. And joining me this week is the one and only Doug Aldrich, a wonderful guitar player. He is amazing. He has been in so many bands that you guys all know and love, including Dio, Whitesnake, but most importantly, he is now in the Dead Daisies, which he's been in for a couple of years at this point. And they just released their next studio record back in January, which we're going to get into. But thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this week's episode, Doug.
Thank you, Sydney, for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. And most importantly, how are you? Because I know that this has been just a crazy time. And I know we talked about it a little bit before we got on recording, but you know, it's just been a crazy year. And I kind of always like to just start out a lot of my interviews too with, you know, how have you been during the last year, which I know is kind of a loaded question.
I've been good. I've been really lucky. A lot of people have had it a lot worse than me. It's just been juggling, you know, like working from home, doing what I can to promote the album, the Holy Ground album, and then, you know, doing dad stuff and husband stuff, and you know, and actually I just moved back into my house after like an 8-month remodel that I would never had time to do, But when I was stuck at home, I decided to go for it. But I've been really good. I wish everybody had been as lucky as I was to be, you know, not get sick and all that.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I know, like you just mentioned, you know, you have young kids and I mean, you have older kids, but you know, I know you've been touring for, you know, at this point, you know, many years with many different bands and you're always kind of on the road. So in a weird way, you know, although I know you probably wish that you were, you know, playing and performing and doing what you love, you know, it also must be nice to have a little bit to be at home and, you know, spend time with the family, right?
It has. And, you know, it's going to be a little strange because we're starting to get busy. We've got some trips on the books to do, you know, start rehearsing in May, I believe. And as it gets closer, I'm starting to think like, wow, how's that going to feel? Because it's been, literally, I haven't been on a plane since 19.
Yeah.
And it's just really bizarre, the whole thing, right? It's like we jumped a year. We went, it's like 2020, just, it's, you know, all that crap we've gone through, it just, it's now past. We're starting to see a little light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just weird that it's like we lost that year. It was gone by. It seems like it was just gone by so fast. And I feel like, you know, we're kind of putting it, we've got the record out now for a couple of months and it feels like we just finished it, but it was a year and a half ago. And, but during that time of 2020, during the hard parts of the lockdown, it just felt like every day was slow motion. You didn't really know what to do with yourself half the time. It took a while, you know, but we're getting through it, you know? So we've got this new album to promote and kind of help kind of get us back out there. And we'll be on the road at some point this summer.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean, because that's what I tell people when I try to describe what the last year is like. It feels like it was like 5 years, like so much happened that it felt like it was like 5 years long, 2020. But then it also felt like it was the fastest year of my life. It was, it's just, there was no, you know, in between. It felt like there was just so much crammed into it, but also like it just went on forever. So I totally know what you mean about that. But, you know, I know you guys, of course, put out this record, but the pandemic did hold it up a little bit, if I'm correct, because I know that you guys recorded it in, I believe, France, right? You guys went into that really great studio. And of course, that was before the world changed forever. So I know that, you know, this kind of whole, you know, COVID-19 pandemic held that up a little bit for you guys.
It did. But, you know, I was thinking about it. If we had, I'm just really thankful that we were able to finish the writing and the majority of the recording. Actually, no, we finished everything before the pandemic hit, even the mixing. And I'm grateful for that, because it wouldn't have been the same record. I mean, I was so freaked out about, you know, what is this thing? You know, can you breathe out? Can you go outside? And it just would have changed the whole dynamic, because we had like the best time ever recording the record before the pandemic. And the process we went through, basically all of us living together like a family, and you know, we'd wake up, have breakfast, and go directly down the hallway to the studio, and then, you know, to have a really great day's work, and then we'd have these like kick-ass dinners at night. Like we had a couple chefs, and you know, then they'd hit the French wine every day, and it was just a great working environment. We were so focused. So if there had been anything like COVID in the back of my mind, I don't think I would have been able to focus on it. You know, it would have been very distracting. But later, once the pandemic hit, we decided, okay, we're gonna have to postpone this whole thing. You know, just who knows what's gonna happen. And the lockdown ended up being more and more and more. So we decided, you know, in order to keep connected with our friends and fans, it would be good for us to put out a song here or there. And so we, even though Unspoken wasn't supposed to be a single or even the first single, it turned out to be like a perfect song for that period. It's kind of, I heard Glenn mention it yesterday, that's why I can tell you, it's kind of about a fresh start and letting go of the past, and certain things are unspoken. So that's the way he described it, and it was perfect for that time. And then later we put out Bustle and Flow, and we had a really nice video for that one. And then later in the year, at the end of the year, we put out this first single, because we knew the record was coming out this year in January. And that was Holy Ground. And that we had done some rehearsing last year once everything kind of cooled down. And so we shot some footage for that video. And then also during the summertime when it was kind of a little cooler in LA, I mean, it was not as crazy in LA, Glenn and I managed to get together a bunch and work on a bunch of new songs. So we've got that. But during the beginning of the pandemic, I was not in a good place to like be creative. You know, it was too crazy.
Yeah, which I was gonna say, and I didn't even think about it until you mentioned that, of like, you know, yeah, you guys finished this record last year before the pandemic. So although it came out this year, yeah, you've had about a year to write and work on new stuff, you know? So you're like almost, in a weird way, even though you were a year behind, you're also like a year ahead, like, you know, kind of worked out a little bit for you guys creatively, so.
Yeah, very, it just, you know, I know a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of new music coming out because a lot of people were able to, you know, put, you got to kind of compartmentalize these types of things. And like, I got to figure out where to put 2020 and that whole thing. But some people could do it faster than others. And in that situation, a lot of people were creating. I remember seeing a lot of friends of mine were doing like, they would do like live concerts, but just not with the band, but like literally in their studio in like a situation like this. And people would do a pay-per-view thing with it, and they were just getting on with their lives. You know, I thought it was great. But me, I was like, okay, I don't know how long this lockdown is going to happen. And I've been wanting to do, I had some permits ready and plans ready. And so I decided to just kind of, along with doing the stuff with the Dead Daisies promotion and writing with Glenn and doing stuff, I decided to do construction. So I was like, I don't know even how I agreed to do this, but I became the contractor. So I was in charge of all these decisions and in charge of getting permits pushed through during COVID. And so I was just really, I was like juggling, you know, it's like, wake up, daddy, I'm hungry, you know, and then it's like, you know, okay, I rented a house like three doors down. So I could see the truck with the permit guys in front of my house. I'm like, okay, I'll be right back. No, daddy, you can't leave me. Don't leave, you know. I'll be right back. Okay, come here, get on my back. And I'd run over there, over here. I just got back in actually and so it was like juggling. I was just the whole time juggling. And then, you know, Glenn would say, I know you're busy, but I got a couple ideas I want to work with you on. And so I booked down to his place and I haven't said that word in a long time, book. That's like a 70s thing. Dude, we got to book over to the store, man. Let's book. It means like go fast.
Yeah, a lot of, it's so funny. I find myself saying like rad and like groovy a lot. It's like making all this language is like making a comeback. It's funny.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad you are because I like those words. So if younger people are doing that, keeping that alive, that's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a great time, you know, I guess, yeah, for you to do the remodeling, because you think about it, I mean, it must have been challenging, you know, like you said, with juggling stuff, but to do that when you're on tour, I mean, must have probably been near impossible.
That's why I had never done it. I mean, I've lived in Los Angeles, or I've lived in this place for like 20 something years and always wanted to do it and just could never, I mean, like you say, being busy. When I was with Whitesnake, I was full on 24/7. Even when we were off tour, I was writing with David and driving back and forth. He'd come to my place. And then after I stopped in Whitesnake, I was in Vegas. I wasn't really living here. I kept my house, but was just staying there. And then I started going back on the road with Glenn. And then the Dead Daisies asked me to join. And it's just been busy, busy, busy. There'd be no chance to do it. And it's so important for me, Sydney, because I notice like when you're doing construction, people just go, oh, you just need the money. But it's not that. There's so many decisions you got to make to like, you know, go. Like I have this wood beam on this one room. It looked really nice. And it wasn't in the original idea to keep it wood. But I love wood. You know, it's like anything wood. So I thought, wow, that's cool. I'm going to keep that open. And then I did the next couple days later, the drywall guys are coming in and they're starting to put drywall over it. I'm like, whoa, no, stop. If I was on tour, I would have gotten a renovation, but it wouldn't have been nearly as detailed as it was since I was here. So, I mean, that's my silver lining, but you know, it's hard to be happy about something in 2020 because of all the crap that all the people that got lost their jobs, all the touring people, you know, people that basically lived from tour to tour, they would just save their money and be on tour all the time. But then all of a sudden it's like they got to use all their savings to live because there's still nothing, you know?
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. It's been tough. And I mean, I know that we're starting to see, you know, like you mentioned earlier, a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, people are talking about maybe something happening, you know, this fall or whatever. And I know that you guys do have a couple of dates, I believe, with Foreigner that are still on. Are they still on, or do you think that they're still happening? Or, I mean, it's kind of hard.
I don't think those are happening, but I could be wrong. We'll see. Those were in like June, I think, and yeah, it was in Europe, and Europe's going through a rough time again. So I don't know, but I know that Glenn was telling me yesterday that he saw there were some dates that were on for the U.S. just to kind of break the ice and get back to, you know, we really don't want to lose the whole year because the record's out. So we really want to get out there and promote it. And there's some Weekend Warrior stuff we're going to start with. So like, that's not a hard thing, as you know, because bands will basically fly in and fly out. Backline is usually rented and we can do that. And then we've got a bunch of stuff throughout the fall in Europe. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to do that. There's a bunch of British dates in UK that I think it was like November, December. So that might happen because UK is doing really good. We're doing really good. If we all continue doing really good, they'd probably let us in, you know, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's tough right now, man. It's like every time a lot of stuff got like pushed back and we try to like have, you know, hope that it's going to happen. And a lot of times, I mean, but that's the thing is that I feel like a lot of people expected that these shows that did get pushed back to this year are probably going to get pushed back again. But
tours,
I know.
Yeah,
tours especially. I mean, like I know, like for example, like this, you know, the big like Motley Crue tour that's supposed to happen. It's, you know, 60,000 people in a stadium in June is probably, you know, it's a little of a tough sell right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if we keep going the way we're going, maybe it would look better, but yeah. The problem with those, Eddie Trunk mentioned it. I really enjoy listening. It's just during the couple hours in the day, listening to him talk about stuff. And he was going to, just like I was saying about us, we're going to do some weekend stuff to promote Holy Ground. He's like, yeah, a lot of bands are going to be doing weekend stuff. And, but it's tours that's the problem because the tour, you got to go from city to city to city or country to country. And it's so different in every state. So you can't do the tour if it's going to be, you know, like two shows a week. It doesn't pay the bills. So, but for Weekend Warrior stuff, that's happening. I just on Sunday, I'm friends with Gilby Clark and Tammy Down and a bunch of guys in LA that they call it the Hollywood Riders, you know, and it's like motorcycle riders. It's like, I call it Gilby's Geezer Gang because we always meet at Gilby's house. But so Gilby said he's got stuff coming up that he's going to start doing. And Tammy said Faster Pussycat's going out to do stuff. And so, I mean, weekend stuff, at least to start, would be nice. There's a club here in Los Angeles called the Baked Potato that is one of the greatest music venues. It's kind of like it's a legendary spot. And I don't know if you ever heard of it, but if you ever come to Los Angeles, you should try to go there because it's like, it's called the Baked Potato. It's usually jazz or fusion rock, but then they do other stuff. But they're starting to have people come in April to get back to shows. And they call it the Baked Potato because that's their main menu item, is they get these big ass potatoes and then they'll put steak or chicken or whatever, or like chicken parmesan on it. And it's just amazing food. And you're sitting like literally 3 feet away from the stage. And you've got these insane musicians, you know, like people like Steve Lukather from Toto play there all the time. And, you know, just a lot of people so Joe Bonamassa plays there all the time. So I'm looking forward to that place getting back.
Yeah. I'm happy that it's still around, you know, too. Cause I mean, all these, that's been so tough also for, you know, independent music venues. You know, there's so many that I know have shut down and, you know, shut down and are not coming back. So it makes me happy when I hear that they're, you know, these legendary, you know, venues that have, you know, been around for for years, you know, are coming back, you know, that they've made it. So that's great to hear.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I don't know the specifics of all the, what the details are, but that place said they are, and they've been doing online streaming shows. So they've been making a little money. It's a family owned business, but then there's other places like Comedy Store and Laugh Factory and all those. So yeah, it's like, there's a lot of legendary places that are, hope, you know, it looks like they're going to make it, but then there's a lot of places that haven't and they're closed. So I'm worried about that a little bit, but we just can do what we can, just do our best and try and, you know, try to, you know, keep being safe. And if I go to a concert, I probably will wear a mask, even though I got one vaccine already. I probably will, even if I'm fully vaccinated, I would probably do it just to be safe, you know?
Yeah. It's going to be a little bit, I think a lot of people realize that, you know, it's going to be a little bit until, you know, we can live, go back to, you know, doing things that we could do in 2019, you know? So I totally know what you mean, but, I want to talk a little bit more about this new record, because I know that this is the first with Glenn. And I mean, I love Glenn Hughes. He was one of my, he was the first guest on the podcast back when I started this. And,
really?
Yeah, he was my very first guest. And, I mean,
that's cool.
He's the greatest. And, you know, like I've, you know, heard you say, you know, he's the voice of rock. So, you know, I know you guys worked together before, you know, you were helping him out on his solo gigs and things like that a couple years back, but you know, he recently joined the group, and this is the first record, the record Holy Ground, that he's on. So talk a little bit about what it was like getting Glenn in the band and just writing with him, you know, on this record.
Okay, so we wrapped up 2018 tour, and at that time, John had pretty much said, look, for 19, I'm not going to be available. I'm going to do my solo stuff. He had a I think it was a live record that he put out. It was Motley's, you know, Motley kind of stuff that he had done with them. And then Marco was touring, and we were not really sure exactly what the next step was. We wanted to carry on. We wanted to make a new record, but we didn't know who was going to sing. And then we tried a couple of people just jamming and stuff. And then eventually I got a call from management that they had been talking to Glenn, which maybe they thought about that because they knew when I first met the management for Dead Daisies, I was working with Glenn. But I didn't think about Glenn because he was busy doing his own shows and he was on tour a lot. And it just didn't occur to me. But once they said they were talking to him, they said, what do you think? And I thought, man, that would be amazing. That's really cool. That'd be like a really fresh sound and to mix the two. So they said, call him up. So I did. And I said, you know, dude, is this for real? And he goes, yeah, I think it's time for you and I to make some music, and it's with the Dead Daisies. That's what we should do. And I was like, great. So immediately, me and David Lowie had been writing and doing some stuff, as I mentioned, but immediately at that point, I started writing with Glenn in mind. And so, like, you know, just heavy grooves and stuff like that that I thought he would dig, like the Bustle and Flow riff, and I thought that's something that Glenn would dig. It's kind of got that 70s vibe, and Like No Other, it's called. That was another one I thought Glenn would dig this, you know? And then, so I immediately had a direction because I knew what Glenn liked. And you got to basically propose these ideas to the singer. You know, you can't, I mean, if you're Van Halen, you can go, okay, this is the song, just make something on it. But with the way that I've worked always with Dio and Whitesnake, with David Coverdale, and with John Corabi, and with Glenn, I would present these ideas, you know, like, here, like, I'm not precious about it. Here's something I think you might dig, but if you don't, I got a million other things too. And then Glenn had a bunch of ideas that were pretty much, he goes, I got a bunch of things already. I want to show you. I think you're really going to dig it. So immediately we were like writing and getting excited about it. And then the first actual band event was to get together in at Sunset Sound in LA, where they, you know, they've done a bazillion records at Sunset Sound, and it's a famous place. And we went there and we started, kind of broke the ice, you know, got some songs written. And and when we announced Glenn, we wanted to release a song, so we released a song from that session, which is called Righteous Days. And first song that we wrote together. It's kind of got aspects of Glenn and the Daisies together, and it was a good first step.
Yeah, and I love the way that his voice sounds on this record. I mean, kind of like you mentioned, I think that it was such an interesting, you know, mix. You know, you had, I feel like, somebody like Glenn who kind of came in, and, you know, Glenn doesn't sound like John Corabi, and John Corabi doesn't sound like Glenn. You know, it's a completely different vibe, which I think, you know, when you're bringing in a new vocalist like that, you know, sometimes, you know, I guess if you're trying to stick to the original sound, you know, it's helpful to have somebody who sounds like, you know, the previous singer. But in this case, you know, I think with the band like the Dead Daisies, it was nice to have it kind of be almost a new era of the Dead Daisies, you know what I mean? Instead of just a, you know, continuation.
Yes. And I that's kind of the thing with this band anyways. I mean, it's been, you know, there's been personnel changes the entire time. And I really liked the version of the band before I got in it. And then I felt like I was able to take the band a little different direction, and naturally, it got a little more guitar oriented because David said, look, we had Dizzy. Dizzy's amazing, but there's no replacing Dizzy. You know, he didn't want to get somebody else to try to play like Dizzy. And so it's the same thing with John. You know, didn't want to try and replace John. You can't, you know, he's really a unique singer, and he's a great, I don't know if I mentioned this on the other podcast we were talking, but, he really was like a great MC of a party. Like at the concert, he would make it very personal, and naturally he would be telling jokes, and sometimes, or like when he's talking to the audience, it was like a party vibe, you know. With Glenn, it's totally different. It's more of a concert experience with Glenn, and the songs have a lot of aspects of Glenn that he brings. But on another note, Glenn's never played with two guitar players before, so that's fresh for him. And I think this is kind of like, I mean, you can hear it's traditional Glenn sounding stuff in his playing, but he also does some things he hasn't really done before, which, like songs like My Fate, where he's he sings really quiet, like soft, and kind of like really different range than we're used to from Glenn. And there's a lot of moments like that, and then there's other stuff where, you know, he's this one song, Come Alive, we were doing, and it gets to the end of the, you can tell it's going to go back to the riff, like at this point in the song. And Glenn starts to do one of those, you know, one of those things. And you're going, wait a minute, the distance to get to that part that we know it's going to happen is too, he can't keep that note. It's like, and you start to get nervous, like you're going, oh man, he's like going to blow his voice out or something. And he just keeps going, and all of a sudden the riff comes in and smacks you in the face, and he still goes. And then he starts to put some vibrato on the end, and it's like, oh my God, he made it. He made it, you know?
Yeah. It's insane to me. I remember I saw him back in 2018 when he was doing that Deep Purple tour, and he was going out and doing all the Deep Purple songs. And I could not believe his voice. I could not believe the strength of his voice. To me, it sounded, you know, just like California Jam, 1970, you know, 374, it was incredible. So, I mean, you know, it's so great that he's, you know, a part of this band. I mean, doing like new music like this and a new record, because to me, his voice is just as strong as it's ever been.
Yeah, it is. It's like a freak, you know, it's unreal. When they were making their songs when they were younger, you know, I mean, they might've been 21 or 25 or whatever. And as you get older, your vocals change. Especially if you're a singer, you're singing all the time. It's like the muscle gets, it gets looser or whatever, and you can't do those things anymore. You know, it's just like the stuff when you hear Robert Plant, what he did at the beginning of Led Zeppelin, it's like, you're not thinking about that when you're doing it at that time. It just comes natural. But then 20 years later, you're going, shit, I've got to change the melody now. But Glenn really can't, he's like a freak. He just doesn't even, it's not even an issue. You know, it's not even something to talk about. He just sings what he wants.
I think I mentioned this when we last spoke, but, you know, I think it's just, it's amazing, like, looking at your career of, like, all the vocalists that you've had the opportunity to work with. I feel like you've just you know, nailed like every single vocalist, you know, from Glenn Hughes, David Coverdale, Dio, like just, you know, when you look at like the major, you know, rock vocalists. But, you know, I know that you were a teenager in the 70s and the early 80s and all of that. So, I mean, for you, when you're looking back on your career and, you know, not only the fact that you got to play with these guys, but, you know, you wrote with David Coverdale, you wrote with Dio, you know, you got in a studio and recorded in and were a part of their legacy and their discography, you know, is it crazy to you to kind of look back and think that, you know, I'm playing with the guys that I listened to and, you know, were inspired by when I was starting out?
Yeah, it is. It's, I always, you know, you always think about stuff like that and go like, well, when I was 14, because I think I was 14 or 15 when I first heard Deep Purple. And I might have heard Smoke in the Water prior to that. That was on the radio. But with Glenn and David, that was my, you know, that was my favorite thing. And Dio at that same time on stage with Rainbow on stage record with Richie Blackmore. And if somebody said, you know, later I was going to write songs with these guys, I would have been like, you know, that's like somebody telling you, okay, Sydney, tomorrow you're going to achieve something that you've never thought of. And it could happen. You even know it's around the corner, right? But if it's something that you just can't get, you can't wrap your mind around, you're just like, no, come on. But you know, it just shows you that things do happen that you never dream of. But I've just been really lucky, you know? I mean, I don't know how that sort of happened, but I've been very lucky, and I'm grateful for the stuff I've learned from all those guys, including Glenn. And they're all, you know, not as much Ronnie. Ronnie wasn't so much like my bro. He was, but he was still like, even working with him off and on a lot. He was just such a legend, you know, and I'd never got like, we did hang out a lot of times on tour and we do stuff, but it was never like, I didn't with David and Glenn, I feel like these guys are my brothers, like the big brothers in my life. Like I could text David and say, you know, listen, I did text him about, I was having a hearing thing, and I texted Glenn, I mean, David, and said, what do you think? And he goes, yeah, you should go check it out, whatever. And because he had mentioned he had gone, had something happen to his ear and he got it sorted out. So it was cool to have, you know, just be able to ring him up and find out. And then same with Glenn, you know, writing with Glenn and David has been really a learning experience. Always, you know, trying to learn and take something from those situations. But I've been really lucky. And John Corabi and Dean Castronovo, those guys, like every singer, Kelly Hansen I've worked with.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about your time in Hurricane, because I feel like that band is so underrated, especially, you know, the record Slave to the Thrill. Like, I love that album and that cool band. And I love Kelly Hansen. I mean, like you said, you were, when we said earlier, you know, you've had some dates, which, you know, hopefully will happen with Foreigner, you know, which Kelly Hansen now sings in Foreigner. But I was going to ask you about that record and that time in Hurricane, because I feel like it often goes under the radar sometimes. And it's such a great record.
Yeah. So basically I had a band, and my first band was called Lion. And that was like the first recording band. And we had done a bunch of stuff, including like the soundtrack for, this is way before your time, but Transformers, the original first movie that came out. And that was our first job for this label, to write this song for them. It's like co-write the Transformers theme. And then we made a record that I felt was really good. But we were having a tough time with that label. They weren't really going to support us on the road. And the record was doing well. We were on MTV, but they weren't into it. They just, they got their advances for us, and they just were like, okay, that's it, we're done. And so we ended up breaking up. And I turned down a couple offers during that period. One was with Dio and one was with Slaughter. Because I really wanted my band, my bros. I mean, we were living together, and my amps were like our furniture. Like, you know, our kitchen table was two Marshall cabinets. And so every gig, like, the tables under the windows were my Marshall cabinets. It was like all the speaker cabinets were like our furniture. And so we'd go play a gig, the apartment would be empty. So I didn't feel good about like joining another band whilst I'm living with these guys and they're my bros, and I really loved what we were doing. But we ended up breaking up in the end. Our drummer Mark Edwards got hurt, and Cal went and did a record dealing with the Japanese label. So then we had the same manager as Hurricane, and they were looking for someone to finish writing. They had a couple songs going, half dozen songs, whatever. And I came in, just was like, all right, they're cool. You know, we met, we jammed, and it was good. And then, so we made that record, and it was a little difficult for me because, you know, I was the new guy, and they had a producer called Michael James Jackson, who's a great producer, but he and I didn't see eye to eye exactly. And I was really kind of stubborn, I would say now, you know? And so we ended up making a good record, I think, but it wasn't my funnest experience in the studio. You know, like, it was like a little bit more like I had to do what the producer wanted me to do a lot of times. And I kind of argued with him or pushed back, because I was really strong-minded about what I wanted. And I got some of it, and then he got some of it, and then the record turned out, and we went and toured it, and it was a blast. We had a blast. That was my first real kind of touring experience. And then I jumped back with the lead singer from Lion and started working with him on a band. But Kelly is an amazing singer. He's got one of the strongest voices. And that stuff in Foreigner is not easy. That's like, when you listen to that, you hear those songs the way that they start off low, like Jukebox Hero, and then it gets really high. That's hard stuff to do every night. And Kelly's just like, his voice is bulletproof. He's really, and he's got some characteristics of Lou Gramm. He's got his own thing. He's got a little Steven Tyler-ism to him, but he's got his own thing, but he does kind of naturally sound like Lou Gramm. So I was really happy for him when he got that gig, and he basically is Foreigner now, you know? So that's awesome.
Yeah. I saw them, God, back in, good friends with Jeff Pilson, and they played around here, and you know, I'd actually never seen Foreigner, and I'd seen them, and he blew me away. Just, it was just an incredible show, you know, and like, and Mick Jones is still there, and it was phenomenal. But you know, yeah, I love that Hurricane record. I feel like a lot of it is kind of on the more underrated side. So if anybody's listening and hasn't heard that record, I definitely recommend that you go listen to it, because I really do love it.
It's on Spotify and all that stuff. Yeah, YouTube probably.
But you know, we're talking about all of these, you know, kind of major bands that you had the chance to work with. You know, you got to work with Dio, you got to work with Whitesnake. And I mean, I know that over the last couple of years, the Dead Daisies has really been kind of your main focus and what you've been working on. But I'm curious, I mean, because I'm sure that you get, you know, maybe, you know, not now, because a lot of people know that this is your focus, but, you know, I'm sure that you've gotten offers to play in other bands. I mean, could you ever find yourself rejoining kind of like a bigger entity like a Whitesnake or a band like a Dio again? Or do you think that you're content in what you're doing now with the Dead Daisies, and you kind of want to water this and see where, you know, how it grows?
Well, I'm really excited about this album. Obviously, you know, people are always excited about the album that they do. And so that's all I'm thinking about. I don't, you know, there's probably things that come up that, you know, you get offers to do stuff, and you never know. Never say never, but right now Glenn and I definitely want to focus on promoting this album, and especially playing it live. And of course I love bands like Whitesnake, and if David ever said, hey, you know, I would like you to fill in and do some stuff or whatever, I would definitely do it. But I would want to maintain the Dead Daisies thing. I've been working on this for about 5 years now, and putting a good, you know, a lot of effort to keep it moving forward. And as I said, circling back to with Glenn, it's just like, we got to see it. We got to get on the road and see it through for a while, and see if we have an opportunity to get back in the studio and work on some of the stuff that we did last summer. It's like next level. It's perfect for the next level of where we are. So I hope to do that.
Yeah. Have you guys played a show with Glenn yet? Have you? I'm not sure right now. Mm-mm.
No, we have just rehearsed with him, and it was amazing. You know, that's my funnest time of preparing for going on the tour, is the rehearsals. That's my favorite, because you basically, you're focused on, you know, you go to rehearsal, there's everything's, you know, set up and ready, and then you can start tweaking your sound and practice your parts the way that you want them to be live, and got an opportunity to really hone it down and do it every day until it's right. And then at night you go back to your hotel or your house, whatever, and you can just, you know, focus and practice. And especially like if it's, when we rehearsed last year in Los Angeles, I ended up staying at the hotel, even though it was just close to home, because in that mode, I can really zone in, you know, and wake up, sleep in a little bit, get some good rest, and then warm up and practice before band practice. And then after, you know, have a dinner and then go back to my room and work on what I want to achieve for the next day. And I love that aspect. And then, you know, getting to really spend time with the guitars that I'm choosing to go on the road with, making sure they're exactly the right ones or how they're set up to play how I want them exactly. Because then on tour, as you probably know as well as anybody, if you're in and out so fast, sometimes you just show up, get dressed and get on stage, and your guitar tech hands you your guitar. You don't even get a chance to say hello and say like, what's going on with you today? You know,
right.
It's like, and then you give it back and you don't see it for another day or two. So I love the rehearsal aspect of it.
Yeah. And I'm sure that kind of like you mentioned, you know, when you guys were recording the record, you know, you were kind of like a family, you know, you saw each other every day, you know, when you're rehearsing and stuff like that, it also must really get you guys in tune with each other, seeing each other all the time, you know, kind of, you know, coming back together more so, you know, than when you aren't seeing each other every day, or it was a couple months between, you know, you guys play together or work together, you know, it must be nice to kind of finally fall in a little bit of a, I want to say routine or something, you know, with those guys when you're rehearsing.
Yeah, it's really good, because I always record rehearsals. So like once we kind of decide how we're going to end a song and transition segue or whatever into another song, we can record that and basically refer back to those recordings to make sure that we're, you know, and say a lot of times, like with Whitesnake, for example, we would rehearse and then we'd have like a couple days off, and then we'd fly to the place and we might not play for like in between the last rehearsal 5 days. Yeah. So it's always good to have those tapes to refer to keep it fresh. Like, oh yeah, I remember. And then, you know, you get on stage and a lot of times it takes, even with all that preparation, it still takes a few gigs under your belt before it's like solid, you know?
Right, right. Where you can just kind of go through it and it's kind of just muscle memory at that point.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious, because you mentioned your guitars too. I won't keep you for too much longer, but I know you mentioned your guitars too. You know, what's your staple guitar? Is it the one you have right now? Like that you typically go to? Because I know you have a lot that you work with. What's your kind of go-to one at the moment?
This is my go-to. This is basically just it's a Gibson reissue 1957. In 57, they made, in 57 and 58, well, they made gold tops, actually. I take that back. The first Les Paul was a gold top, and it was 52. But then in 57, they had all these little updates, like this Tune-O-Matic bridge and humbucker pickups that would not be as buzzy as the original ones like this. These are the other kind of P90s. And they're just big single coil pickups, and they sound amazing, but they're a little bit buzzy. So the humbucker got a little bit of a fatter sound. And so this is a reissue of that 57. And then I just do a couple of little things. Like, I've got these signature pickups that a company called Sir Guitars, John Sir, and I put together a pickup that's perfect for Les Pauls. And we went through, I told him what I wanted, and I sent him a couple of pickups that I liked, but were lacking a little bit. And he sent me back four prototypes, and I picked one, and that's what we went with. And so I always put those in my Les Pauls. And usually I'm really particular about the frets and the fret wire. I want it to be a certain height and a certain feel. And I want the strings to line up on the edge a certain way. And so most all my guitars are refretted with Dunlop, Jim Dunlop fret wire. And then tone pros, bridges and stop pieces. So that the tone pros makes them, so like the way that Les Pauls were originally, these parts, when the strings came off, these parts could come off, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with that, except that when you're in that situation on tour and you don't get to play your guitar before the gig and check it, make sure it's all good, sometimes the parts would move. And so in that situation, these Tone Pros parts keep it locked and it doesn't move. So it's the same every day. And that's it. So this is the go-to. It's just this is one of probably, I think I have four or five Gold Tops of this exact same thing. And so that's kind of the main go-to. This is the one that I was holding all day. This is a 1968 Standard. And I always wanted a 68 because it was, it was kind of the first year back after they were doing SGs, and it's just a really, it's made with a lot of 50s parts or 50s ideas. As time goes on, they would change things or whatever, but this is I found this guitar last year during COVID in a pawn shop in Chicago. It was like at the beginning of COVID, and I look for guitars that have been maybe refretted or something, so they're not original, so that I can get a better deal on it. Like they call it player grade. Right. So this one had been refinished, but other than that, it was completely original. So I was like, perfect. I got it for like probably half what it was worth, and then I got it refretted with the frets I want. I didn't change the pickups because these have a specific sound that's really good. But yeah, so I'm addicted.
How did you find your love for a Les Paul? Because I mean, it's been kind of like your signature guitar for a while now. So, you know, what was the first experience where you picked it up and played one and you were like, yes, this is a guitar for me?
It was more of a thing where when I was a kid, that was the guitar that I most associated with. I think really, I mean, this is going to sound very random, but Jeff Beck had an album Blow by Blow in 1975. And my older sister had it. And on that cover, he had on the back cover, it was a picture of him playing a 1954 Les Paul, which is similar to that one. It's just got, instead of both these pieces, it just got one piece and then the strings wrap around it. But he had gotten humbucker pickups in it. Anyway, he's standing there with this Les Paul and it just looked right. And then the front cover is an artist's interpretation of that picture. And I just always stuck in my mind, like, that guitar looks great. And I thought that was mostly a Les Paul on the album. I think it was a lot more of a Strat on some of it. But, or I don't even know. I don't even know what guitar he used exactly on that album. But that photo kind of locked me into, I really love that shape. It's just really, it looks cool. You know, it's very, well, it's got a feminine look to it. You know, I thought that looked nice. But then when I was going to get my first guitar, my mom and I went to a department store. Do you remember there used to be one called Sears? Did you ever hear of Sears?
Yeah.
In long time ago, Sears had a catalog that they'd mail out. And in there, they had a guitar and an amp. And it was like, I don't know, probably $100 or something. It was really cheap, really bad copy of a Les Paul. But it looked kind of like it. And that was my first guitar. And then later... And that was a Sunburst. And then later, my sister's friend had a Les Paul that I don't know why he's going to sell it. It was a 73 Gold Top, really similar to this. It just had different pickups than these, but otherwise it had the same knobs, same, pretty much everything. It had a bigger headstock, but he was selling it for $300. And I had saved about, I worked all summer and I had saved, I remember it was like August or something. I had saved about $100 something, and my mom gave me the other rest of the money to go get that Les Paul. And so I finally got a real Gibson Les Paul, and I remember opening the case, looking like, just first thing I just wanted to say, it says, wow, it says Gibson, you know. And that was it. I loved it, and I had that guitar for a long time. But then little by little I started to fall in love with other guitars, and I got a Strat, I started doing some customizing. You know, people like Eddie Van Halen came out and kind of blew the world apart with their tech innovations, you know, with his innovations. And when I got to California, I started working with Grover Jackson, started using Jackson guitars a lot. Then I worked with Fender for a little while in the 90s. I always had a Les Paul all the time just for recording or, you know, whatever, but I was kind of dabbling with stuff. And eventually, you know, I've kind of just got burned on everything and went back to a Les Paul. I had a black 73 custom that sounds incredible. And I was using that. I was playing with, I was just filling in on a gig with Tiffany. Remember the girl, Tiffany?
Yeah.
She's a great girl, great singer. And she wanted to rock it up a little bit. So I was jamming with her for a minute. And I was using that black custom. And then Ronnie called me and said, I'm doing an album. You want to do it? And so I used that custom. And he had a Les Paul that I really liked. So I kind of just went back to Les Pauls. I did use a Strat a lot with him for the Rainbow stuff. But then when David Coverdale asked me to do a 2-month, it was just a 2-month tour. He goes, I'm glad you're using Les Pauls. I really like that. And I go, well, yeah, it's, I mean, when I was recording with Ronnie, that it could definitely, even though I had a Super Strat with the humbucker pickup in it to make it similar to a Les Paul, it's still not the same. Les Paul's still a different sound. And so I was pretty much 100% Les Pauls with David. And, you know, I record with different stuff here and there, but Les Paul, this is the most comfortable guitar for me. Yeah. For sure, this design.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, like, even aside from, of course, you know, like, the sound that, you know, a Les Paul is known for, it's also, you know, I feel like it's just that guitar that just kind of, like, embodies, like, rock and roll. Like, you know, you look back and you see Jimmy Page playing a Les Paul, and it was just, like, one of those things where you saw all of these, like, you know, guitar giants, you know, playing a Les Paul in it. You know, I'm sure for you, too, like you said, you saw that picture of Jeff Beck, and even just the look of it, you know, is something that attracts a lot of people too.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you're, you know, I mean, now I wouldn't think about stuff like that. I would think about, like, well, what does it sound like, you know, or yeah. How does it feel? But I was playing, my younger sister had a classical guitar, and that was my first guitar experience. And it had kind of a Les Paul style. Maybe that had something to do with it too, but it's just aesthetically, it looked right, you know?
I'm not going to keep you too much longer. At the end of every single one of my interviews, though, I ask the same 5 kind of quick questions that are kind of vague, but allow my audience to get to know my guests just a little bit better. So the first question is, if you weren't in the profession that you're currently in, so guitarist, songwriter, musician, what do you think that you would be doing?
Well, I could never imagine. I've always been doing this since I was a kid. It's not even really like, it's just part of my life, but I will say that I found it really interesting contracting. So maybe, I don't know. My first job when I was a kid was in a construction situation. I got paid like $1.50 an hour to sweep up and clean up after the workers, you know, keep things. I think basically I just went there and said, look, I need a job. I went to the boss and I said, anything I can do, you know, anything you could have me do. And he's like, well, okay, I'll pay you whatever to just get rid of the sawdust and pick up the wood and stack it up, whatever they tell you to do, just do it. And I really liked it. You know, I liked being around the wood, as we talked about. I love wood. I was just a kid. So there was a million other distractions that happened, sports and relationships and music especially. But if I now, just going through this remodel situation, it was really fun, you know, to like hang out with the different guys and figure out and watch how they're doing it. And, you know, like the main guy on the job was, you know, these guys, they kind of come around and they'll work for a few days, then they'll go on another job and work for a few days, and then they'll leave room for if a plumber's coming. They don't want to be there if the plumber's there, getting in each other's way. So he would go away for a couple of days and he'd come back, and I had tried to, and I was like, I want to see if I can put a door in, you know, I want to see if I can do it. So I would try and do it. And he'd come back and he'd be like, Doug, why didn't you wait for me? I go, I just felt like doing it. I mean, I wanted to try it. Look, it's pretty good. He goes, it's close, but you got to, you know, you have to do it like this. So who knows? Maybe I would do that.
I mean, at least you got to learn a little bit from doing, you know, the remodel, you know, you got to learn a little bit about how they do it, you know, kind of firsthand experience.
I learned a lot. I mean, I learned so many things, so many tricks that make things easier. During the thing, I was wanting to rebuild a fence in my backyard, and I built it and I showed the framer. I go, look what I did on the weekend. He's like, I'm gonna redo that for you because it's gonna blow over. And it did actually, like there was a storm that came through and it blew half of it down. But I learned, you know?
Right.
So.
The second question is, what is something that you wish everybody knew about you?
That's a really difficult question. I don't think there's much more that people need to know about me. I think that everybody knows everything, but I'm a homebody, really. I mean, if I go on the road, you can't stay in your room every day. It's like, you got to get out and exercise or, you know, go to the bar or go to dinner or whatever, something I got to do. But generally when I'm home, I'm totally cool with just chilling and watching movies or, you know, checking out the news, seeing what's going on around the world. So I sometimes have to be dragged out of my house because when I'm home, I'm just like, it's super comfortable. I love, you know, just be in my space, you know.
Does it ever make touring difficult for you? You know, like when you have to leave for, you know, extended periods of time like that?
Yeah, it does. It's always been difficult since having kids.
Right.
Otherwise it wouldn't be a problem, except that, you know, being in before kids, relationships were harder because, you know, there wasn't the technology of FaceTime and all that stuff. And so relationships would always be difficult. But then FaceTime came out, that helped a lot. But then having kids, it's really difficult, even with FaceTime. It's not the same. You know, they want to be able to cuddle and they want you to pick them up and when they're not happy or whatever. And then as they get older, there's all experiences of Little League baseball or soccer, stuff my son's into right now. And I had an opportunity to coach his soccer team. And I didn't even know anything about soccer, really. I was going to be an assistant coach. And they said, no, we need coaches. If your son wants to play, we need more coaches so you can help us out. But I did it. And then there was like a draft to draft these kids. They had all these stats on each kid. And I was just like, this is intense, man, to figure this out. But I had ended up drafting a bunch of great kids. And we worked hard. And one of the best players that I drafted, his dad was kind of like a coach, but he didn't want the responsibility of a coach. So he was like, I'll be the assistant coach. And this guy was awesome. So he was like, technically he knew exactly what to teach them and I could mentally prepare them. So like the way that I would prepare myself for, you know, getting ready to play a show or whatever, being focused and all that. And we went on and we won everything all the way up until COVID stopped us. We went to the Southern, you know, through the Southern California AYSO championships. And I think like it was a great experience to do that. So I would never have that if I was going on tour. Back to your original question. I used to get anxiety about like, okay, it's a week away and I got to go away. I'm not ready. I'm not packed. Musically, I'm ready. Rehearsal has been great, but I'm like, I'm not ready to like, it would be a little anxiety to leave. Yeah. But once on the plane, and once in the hotel and kind of getting on the routine, we'd lock in pretty quick.
And like, do you think like with the Dead Daisies, it's going to be more of kind of, I know you're talking about right now to start, you know, kind of like weekend shows, but do you think it's going to be more of kind of multiple shorter legs? So you have more of a break where you can come home instead of having it be like, you know, intense, you know, month long tours? Or?
Well, honestly, that's what I do. That's what we do. So it's going to get back to that at some point. We're going to be doing, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, periodically, you know. But yeah, we'll start off slow and we'll do what we got to do. But eventually we've got ground to make up and want to promote this album, play it live and take it to the people.
The third question is, if this is the one that everybody laughs at because it's such like a predictable question, but if you were stranded on a desert island and you only had three records to bring with you to listen to off the top of your head.
No, you can't ask me that question, Sydney. I must answer. I'll do my best. I'm going to say Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow, just because we talked about it. And I love that album. It's got no lyrics on it, so you can just trip out and not think about it, or you can listen to the actual technique involved and the sounds that they captured. It was produced by George Martin from the Beatles, and for him to take on just a guitar player album, like an instrumental album, is meant that it was, first of all, it was Jeff Beck and it was some great tunes. And yeah, so that would be one, Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow. And I would say I have to take some Zeppelin, because that's the, you know, I would take the Physical Graffiti album because it's a double album and it's got everything from Kashmir to Into the Light is on it. It's got a lot of trippy songs that would be good for a desert island. And then it's got, you know, stuff like Wonton Song and Custard Pie is great. I mean, it's got a ton of great songs. And the acoustic stuff, Down by the Seaside is a really awesome song. I love that song. So yeah, Physical Graffiti by Led Zeppelin. And then lastly, something like, I got to go with the music for the mood. So I got the instrumental cover and I got Zeppelin, and that cover is a big thing. But sometimes you just got to tear it up. It's difficult because I really love the Allman Brothers, and I would love to have an Allman Brothers album, like live at the Fillmore East or something. But I'm going to go with Van Halen, Fair Warning, because if I want to tear it up, that's my Van Halen album to tear it up. For like when you're wanting to work out or you want to get island crazy, you know, then you can crank that album and just like go berserk.
Something to get you fired up to try to like catch fish or something, you know, that's what I.
Yeah.
The fourth question is, okay. What is one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self if you could?
Don't sweat things, you know, that just to chill and let things happen. You know, don't beat yourself up about stuff that you can't control. You know, everyone goes through what they go through for, I guess, some reason, but I would, I definitely, you know, would stew about stuff over, you know, in the big scheme, it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
Like just basically enjoy the ride. If I would have known how lucky I would be to not really worry about it, just enjoy it, you know, and to work harder. You know, there's been some times when I didn't work hard enough, you know. Sometimes, I mean, I do work hard and I stay focused when I'm supposed to, but there's other times where I think about, you know, that I could have pushed harder. So maybe I would work harder on certain things or learn more. I mean, God, I've been everywhere in the whole world and I barely can speak English, but I know little bits of German, I know little bits of Japanese, I know little bits of Russian, a few different things, but Spanish, of course, but I can't speak any of them fluently. French, I should know a couple languages. I think that would be an advice I'd give myself.
Yeah, I definitely relate to about the one about like stewing over stuff. I tend to do that a lot of like, you know, especially I think in like the fast paced world, you know, you think everything's the end of the world and then you realize that it wasn't. And then it's kind of a regret of like, yeah, just kind of sit back and enjoy what's happening because, you know, life is short. That whole kind of cliche, but true saying.
It really is true. And we all grow up so fast and, you know, music makes me feel young, you know. It's like I feel the same that I did when I was 15. When I hear that song that was playing when I was 15, I feel the same. It's just great. But yeah, life is short.
Absolutely. And the last question I have for you is more of a fun one. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Well, I know the one that comes to mind is not the one that I'm going to say, but the one that comes to mind is my daughter wants, she asked me for, she wanted Santa to give her the powers like Elsa from, what's that movie? Frozen. So she could basically, you know, freeze you, you know, that's the one that comes to mind. But I would say probably, you wouldn't want to have something like, you don't want to like read people's minds, cause that could really mess you up. I think superpower, the one I would want to fly, I'd just be able to fly like a bird. I mean, I wouldn't, even if it was a situation where you said, okay, you're not allowed to ever show anybody or tell anybody. It's just going to be your secret, special secret power, superpower. But like to be able to just go, hey, all right, guys, I'm just going to go for a drive for a little bit and then go in the woods and then fly around the trees and stuff. That would be awesome. Is that considered a superpower, flying?
Yeah, that's definitely considered a superpower. I mean, Superman could fly. So to me, that's definitely counts. How disappointed was your daughter though when she woke up on Christmas morning and was like, gah? I don't have freezer powers.
I explained that he gave her other powers, other special powers that make her really special, and that she's got all kinds of secret powers that nobody knows about. And then sometimes, you know, you get things that you don't realize you have. But I said, you know, you don't want to be freezing everything all the time. It would get really cold. He gave you other powers. Just wait and see, you know. And then once, you know, and then she'd bring it up once in a while, but it's just a thing, you know. She would just, you know, watch that and be like, oh, I want that. You know, I want to be able to make an ice bridge.
Oh, that's so funny.
She's five. So it's like, you know, it's like every day is a hilarious thing, you know. The one that was funny the other day was, you know, because we've been moving, so we moved back, and it turns out that she said, Dad, come here. There's a big problem. She said, come here. And she walked, and she goes, look, right there, Dad, see? And I'm like, what? The elf, he's here. I'm like, ah, shit. The elf. It's like, you know, the elf is gone right before Christmas, as they're supposed to be gone, but the elf came back. And she's like, I didn't touch him, but he's here. I mean, that's just, why is he here? I said, he probably forgot how to get home. So we got to send him back to the North Pole. When she turned, I got him and put him in a box and put him away. And then I said, you know, I sent him off. And he's like, where is he? I said, she goes, he couldn't have gone that fast. I go, yeah, he went. I just told him he had to go back to the North Pole. And he just left. But it was just, it's funny. She's those little things, you know, so like she can see stuff that I wouldn't notice something. And she'd be like, look, there's a problem over there. There's a, you know, whatever. Lucy pooped in the corner or whatever, you know, but fun.
The good old elf on the shelf. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this week's episode. I really, really appreciate it. And everybody, if you are listening, be sure to check out the new Dead Daisies record, Holy Ground. Some great stuff on there. And of course, you know, there's going to be touring plans once touring starts back up. So stay tuned with Doug and the Dead Daisies for that, because you don't want to miss these guys out on the road. So thank you so much again, Doug. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cindy. That was a great interview. And time flies, so you take care, stay healthy, and I'll see you on the road.
You guys just finished listening to my interview with guitarist Doug Aldrich. I hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed being a part of it. And after listening to that, right, Doug is just such a down-to-earth guy. He's just so easy to talk to, so easy to just talk to about everything that he's got going on. And I'm really, really looking forward to finally seeing the Dead Daisies once touring comes back. You know, they're going to be playing everywhere all over the States when that happens. And I'm really, really looking forward to going ahead and seeing Doug and Glenn and the rest of the guys performing this new record, Holy Ground, which, again, if you haven't purchased the record released back on January 22nd, I definitely recommend that you go and do so. It's just a great hard rock record with really catchy riffs and really catchy choruses, and is a great record to start off this warm spring summer season with. So if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to Holy Ground, be sure to go to your local music store or go to the Dead Daisies website, purchase the record, show the Dead Daisies some love and support, and let me know what you think of Holy Ground, because it's just, to me, such a great record, and I'm so happy that we're still getting music from Glenn Hughes and, of course, Doug and the rest of the guys. So be sure to go ahead and pick up the Dead Daisies Holy Ground. If you really loved what you heard and are interested in donating directly to the Metal From the Inside podcast, you can go to www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here, you can click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. As always, no donation is required to listen to the podcast. We are available for 100% free on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcast. So there is no donation necessary to listen. I always just like to have the option there for those who might be interested. We also have Metal From the Inside merchandise, which you can purchase at www.season-of-mist.com. You just go ahead and type Metal From the Inside in the the search bar, our merch will come right up and you can purchase the logo in so many different styles, from t-shirts to hoodies, long sleeves, muscle tanks, racer back tank tops, women's cuts, anything like that. There are so many different styles to choose from and they're made to order just for you. So if you'd like to purchase some Metal from the Inside merchandise, again, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com to purchase your Metal from the Inside merchandise made to order just for you. If you guys would like to stay up to date with Metal from the Inside, the best place to do so is at www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and we are also on Facebook at Metal from the Inside. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Metal from the Inside, to go ahead and watch the visual components of each and every interview that I do. You can watch Doug and I's interview through our Zoom call on the Metal from the Inside YouTube channel and every interview that I've done so far. So go ahead and be sure to subscribe. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor, on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. And you can also contact me by going ahead and clicking the contact tab on Metal from the Inside's website. Every single message I receive through that contact sheet goes directly to me. So if you would love to chat hard rock, metal, anything like that, that is how you can reach me. You can also message me on Twitter and Instagram. It may take me a little bit to get back to you, but I promise I will. I always love to chat with you guys about episodes, guests that you want to see on the podcast, and all of that fun stuff. So be sure to tweet me, message me, email me to let me know what you'd like to see here on the podcast and who your favorite guest has been so far on the Metal from the Inside podcast. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode and to my interview with the legendary Doug Aldrich. I am so blown away every single week by all of your support and that you guys are just enjoying the podcast and looking forward to episodes every single Friday. So if you are a listener, which you are, if you're listening to this episode, I really, really appreciate your support and that you take the time to listen to these conversations and to pay attention to everything we've got going on over here at Metal from the Inside. So thank you guys so much. There is a ton in the works. I know I always say that, but it's true. Thank you guys so much. Be sure to stay safe, take care of yourselves, listen to your favorite hard rock and metal album, and we will be right back here 1 week from today for a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and I'll see you guys next week. Rock on.